Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada Ki. Persons with the vision of differentiation are imbued with the material qualities lamentation, jubilation, fear, envy, greed, illusion, and madness. They are influenced by the immediate cause, which they are busy counteracting, because they have no knowledge of the remote supreme cause, the personality of Godhead. Purport. Krishna is the cause of all causes, sarva karana karanam. But one who has no connection with Krishna is disturbed. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda ki, Sitaram Lakshmana Hanuman ki, Shri Shri Gaunitai ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, chai. Krishna is the cause of all causes, sarva karana karanam. But one who has no connection with Krishna is disturbed by immediate causes and cannot restrain his vision of separation or difference. When an expert physician treats a patient, he tries to find the original cause of the disease and is not diverted by the symptoms of that original cause. Similarly, a devotee is never disturbed by reverses in life. Tateno kampa susamikshamano. Bhagavatam 10.14.8. A devotee understands that when he is in distress, this is due to his past misdeeds, which are now accruing reactions. Although by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, these are only very slight. Karmani nirdahati kintu chabakti bhajam. Brahma Samhita 5.54. When a devotee under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is to suffer because of faults in his past deeds, he passes through only a little misery by the grace of the Lord. Although the disease of a devotee is due to mistakes committed sometime in the past, he agrees to suffer and tolerate such miseries, and he depends fully on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, he is never affected by material conditions of lamentation, jubilation, fear, and so on. A devotee never sees anything to be unconnected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Madhvacharya, quoting from the Bhavishya Puran, says, Bhagavad darshanadyasya virodhad darshanam prithak prithak drishti cha vigyayo natu sad bheda darshanaha. Om jnanati mirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshuran militam yena tasmai shri gurve namaha. Namom Vishnu padaya Krishna prishthaya bhutale shrimati bhakti vedanta swaminiti namine. Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschate Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivashadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I'd like to ask for the blessings of Dissembled Vaishnavas, in particular Dharmatma Prabhu and others. So once there was a great sage, a great guru. His name was Parashar Bhatt. This is a true story. He was about 800 years ago. He lived in Sri Rangam, and he was in the line of Ramanujacharya. He had many, many disciples, great guru, instructed and guided them back towards Godhead. Sri Rangam is a very special place. It's described that there's 108 Divya Deshas, and Sri Rangam is the first of those. Tirupati, in comparison, is 18th. Sri Rangam is known to be Bhuloka Vaikuntha. So just like Gokul Vrindavan is Bhuloka Vrindavan, similarly, Bhuloka Vaikuntha is understood to be Sri Rangam. So it's a very special place. And in this place, Parashar Bhatt would have many disciples and they would follow his instructions. They were serving him very diligently. So every day outside of Parashar Bhatt's kutir, he lived a very simple life. Outside of his kutir, there would be a scholar who walked by every day. And every day the scholar would understand that Parashar Bhatt is a great personality. Excuse me. So he would pay his obeisances, he would give some respect, and Parashar Bhatt would just give him a cursory nod and not really give him any kind of heartfelt praise or attention. And so every day his disciples would watch this and they'd wonder why. suddenly one day a beggar came along. He was a Brahmana beggar, and he was begging for alms. And he came to the kutir of Parashurbhat, and he began to beg alms. And Parashurbhat became so happy to see him, and he invited him into his home. And he sat him down, he gave him some water, sweet words, he gave him a meal, and he gave him some alms to take away with him. And all of the associates, all of the disciples of Parashurbhat were very confused. They said, there's this great scholar, and he comes every day, and you give him no attention. And now this scanty-looking, ill-dressed, disheveled beggar, he's come. And suddenly you're giving him so much attention, so much kindness. Why? So Parashurbhat explained that tomorrow you'll find out why. Tomorrow you'll find out. So the next day the disciples were all looking intently at what goes on. They're wondering what will pass. So the next day when the scholar walked by, Parashurbhat invited him into his kutir. And they had a discussion. And in this discussion, Parashurbhat, he asked the scholar... So he asked him in Sanskrit, he said, who is the Paratattva? Who is the greatest personality? Who is the supreme Paratattva? So the scholar, he began to say, you know, that's a good question. That's a question that I've been deliberating on for all of my life, but I've not really come to a conclusion. And he began to say, well, it could be Lord Shiva, it could be Lord Brahma, it could be, you know, Vishnu, it could be this person, this personality, this personality. And he came out with so many different options. And so Parashurbhat said, thank you very much. And then the scholar left and carried on with his day. Then the beggar came along. And again, Parashurbhat invited him into his kutir. And they began to discuss. And during the discussion, actually at the end of the discussion, Parashurbhat asked him, so who is Paratattva? Who is the supreme personality of Godhead? Who is the supreme most person to whom we should dedicate our lives and offer our homage and worship? The beggar suddenly became very angry. He got up. His eyes became wide. And he began to shout. He said, who do you think you are? How dare you sit here as a guru? You're an imposter. You have so many disciples, but you're asking me, who is Paratattva? Who is the greatest personality? You're an imposter. Anyone who's a guru should know who's the greatest personality. The greatest personality is Ranganath, because of course they're in Sri Rangam. And Ranganath is Krishna, of course. The greatest personality is Ranganath. And you sit here in the divine abode of Sri Rangam, and you instruct so many disciples, and you don't know who the supreme personality of God is, who Godhead is. He took his begging bowl, and he threw it against the wall, and left the room, left the kutir. So then Parashurbhat looked at his disciples, and he said, you see, this person, this beggar who's disheveled, who looks so insignificant, he actually knows the truth. And therefore I gave him respect. Therefore I gave him honor. And he described to his disciples that to actually understand who is the supreme personality of Godhead, to understand who we should offer our respect, our worship to, who we should dedicate our lives to know that fact is actually very special. So I was reflecting on this pastime and I was thinking how fortunate we are. We have everything in our books. Srila Prabhupada has given us everything. He's given us these books, these literatures which give us what we understand, you know, when someone says Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, it's like, yeah, yeah, heard that, been there, done that. You know, it's like we hear it all the time. But Prabhupada has given this great knowledge, the essence of all Vedic literatures, the essence of all knowledge, all that is to be known in this world, in this universe, he's given us in these books in a very succinct, distilled way. So when we hear it again and again, it's like it becomes hackneyed for the conditioned soul. But actually this is the truth, the ultimate truth, which many great scholars, great intelligent people trying to find and study and conclude over many years, many centuries. Prabhupada has given us the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the essence of the essence. In 18,000 verses, 332 chapters, something like that, he's really given us and churned that essence. that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We may say that, well, there's many other incarnations described. You know, we hear about Lord Ram, we hear about Varahadev and Narsingadev and so on. But the Paribhasha Sutra, the essence, the fundamental verse in the Bhagavatam is Ete Chamsa Kalapumsa Krishna Stu Bhagwan Swayam. All of the verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, all 18,000 verses, are pointing towards Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because this is the lens verse, the lens through which we should see the rest of the Srimad Bhagavatam, all of the other verses point towards this very fact. So we're so fortunate to have Srila Prabhupada and his insight and his direction. Once Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, he was in Krishna Balaram temple near the Gurukul. And he was discussing with two scholars, and they were talking about high philosophy, so many different ideas and different ways of looking at things, different angles of vision. And then Srila Prabhupada asked a very simple question. Okay, so who's the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And then again, the scholars began to discuss. Nothing against scholars, but they began to discuss and, wrangle about who's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Could be this person, could be that person. And then Srila Prabhupada, just to make a point, he called over one of the Gurukul boys. He was 7 years old. And he asked him, so who's the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And then the little boy said, Krishna. And Prabhupada said, see, there you go. Even he knows. And how does he know? He knows by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. So we're so very fortunate. And in this 10th canto that we're reading at the moment, it is just Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. At the beginning of the first canto, Vyasadeva has written so many Vedic literatures. He's penned the Vedas, the Mahabharata, and so many other great literatures of great knowledge and of some value. But still he's feeling dissatisfied. He's not feeling as though he's really done anything of any value. Naturally, when we serve Krishna, when we do some devotional service, we feel some satisfaction. But Vyasadeva is not feeling that satisfaction. So Narad Muni comes and he instructs him, and what he explains fundamentally is that what you have failed to do is describe Krishna. You fail to describe topics in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore you have this hole in the heart. So this 10th canto is simply about Krishna, Krishna, Krishna in a very direct way. So once there was a greedy man. Whilst we're in the modes of material nature, these impurities, which are described in the verse, are always haunting us. Lamentation, fear, envy, lust, and greed. So once there was a very greedy man. This is in Karnataka about 800 years ago. His name was Navakoti Narayana. Navakoti, his name is very, it's in relation to his life. Nava means nine, and Koti. Koti can mean different things in different contexts. Sometimes it means 1,000, sometimes 1,000,000. In this case, it means 10 million. This man, Navakoti Narayana, he had 90 million rupees. Navakoti. So Koti means 10 million. 9 times 10 million is 90 million. He had 90 million rupees. That's what he was worth. That was his wealth. So in today's terms, that's about $1.5 million. $1.5 million. But that, for 800 years ago, that was huge. Huge. So he was an extremely rich individual, extremely wealthy. But at the same time, he was extremely stingy, very, very greedy over what he had, very keen to hoard it, to keep it, and to not let it be dispersed. So just to depict how stingy he was, once he had a huge palace, a very nice palatial building that he lived in, and next to that was his jewelry shop, which was his main business. So one day he was coming home from a hard day's work, and he would work long hours to ensure that he could accumulate a lot more wealth. So after a long, hard day's work, he was coming home, and he saw his wife, and she was feeding grains to the birds. And he said, "What are you doing, you mad woman? Why are you feeding the birds? You know, we're going to go bankrupt if you continue feeding the birds. What will we eat if you feed the birds all these grains?" So he was really out of this world. He was so greedy. And he said, "Stop, you're going to destroy our whole household if you continue feeding the grains." So he began to collect all the grains back up from the floor and return them to the storehouse. On another occasion, he would often do business with the king. The local king, his name was Krishnadeva Rai. And so once the king came to him, he came to his jewelry shop and he bought all sorts of riches, diamonds, emeralds, rubies and sapphires. And so Navakoti Narayana, he got together the bill and, you know, diamonds so much, sapphires so much, emeralds so much, rubies so much. And then there was another little scribble at the bottom and there was another figure. So the king asked him, "So what is this at the bottom?" And he said, "This is a glass of milk that I gave you." So the king was, "What, you're charging me for the glass of milk?" And he said, "Hey, this is business." So he was a very stingy man, always looking for the little minute details. So on his way home, the short distance between his work and his home, Navakoti Narayana would always just look around, because in India there's many beggars, and there always have been. So he's always looking around to make sure there's no beggars. And if there were beggars, he would shoo them away. So one day there was a beggar, and he comes along and he says, "Please give me something, I need something to eat." And Navakoti Narayana says, "No, go away. I don't want to give you anything. You know, get out of here. I'm a poor man. Go away." So the beggar, he went away, but then he came back the next day, and he said, "Please give me something." And Navakoti Narayana said, "No, go away." For 6 months, this beggar came every day at the same time asking him for something. And every day, in a very hard-hearted way, Navakoti Narayana said, "No, go away. I won't give you anything. I won't give you a penny." After 6 months, it was a special day. It was a beggar's grandson's Upanayana ceremony. He was taking second initiation and receiving the Brahmin thread. So he said, "I need to buy my grandson something as a present, as a gift on this very special occasion. Please give me something." So at this point, Navakoti Narayana said, "Well, you come be coming for 6 months." So he had one broken coin, and he just gave him that broken coin. So this beggar just looked at this coin, and he said, "What will I do with this coin? I can't do anything with this. This is useless to me." So then he just went away, you know, really distraught and upset. So then he went to the wife of Navakoti Narayana. The wife was named Saraswati Bai. She was actually a great devotee. She was a great Vaishnavi. She was always chanting Harinam, and she was always worshipping Tulsi Devi. Morning, noon and night she would worship Tulsi Devi. So she was doing her puja at the time. And so this beggar went to her and he just went onto his knees and he said, "I need something, please give me something. I need to buy my grandson a present." So then she looked at him and she felt so sorry. A woman's heart is soft, you know. So she felt very sorry seeing him in such a poorly state. And she said, "I would love to give you something, but I can't give you anything. Because everything belongs to my husband. And if I give you even a penny, he will cut my neck." So then he looked at her and he said, "There's something you can give me." And she said, "Nothing, everything belongs to him." And he said, "No, there's something, think." And she said, "What?" He said, "Your nose ring. When you got married, your parents, your mother and your father gave you this nose ring as a wedding present. So this you can give me." And then she said, "I can't give you this because every day my husband looks at my face. And he doesn't look at my face because I'm beautiful, but he looks to make sure the nose ring is still there." So this nose ring is there, and every day he will notice straight away that the nose ring is not there. And if it's not there, then he will cut my neck. And then this poor beggar, he looked at her in the eye and he said, "If you give me this nose ring, then something very special will happen." And said, "What will happen?" And then he said, "Your husband will become a devotee." And of course, as a devotee, she had been longing for her husband to also take to devotional ways. But he was so materially driven that he had never even looked at Tulsi Devi. So she said, "If my husband will become a devotee, then I'll do anything." So then she took the nose ring off and gave it to the beggar. So then the beggar took the nose ring and he went straight to the jewelry shop next door, to Navakoti Narayana's jewelry shop. And he gave him this nose ring and he said, "I have this nose ring, how much money can you give me?" So Navakoti Narayana looked at this nose ring and he was shocked. He said, there's only one nose ring like this in the world. This nose ring belongs to my wife, I have no doubt. He said, you must be a thief. You're a thief, you beggar. So then the beggar said, listen, give me money for the nose ring or we'll, you know, forget about it. You know, I'll do business elsewhere. So Navakotinarayan says, fine, let me just go home. The money's at home. I'll bring the money for the nose ring. So he goes home and he says, Saraswati Bai, he's going to his wife. He says, where's your nose ring? And he looks at his wife and the nose ring is not there. So she thinks, okay, this is the end. I'm dead. I'm gone. And literally, he's ready to kill her. So she goes in, she says, wait, in the puja room, I have my nose ring. So in the puja room, she actually has a box of poison, like cyanide. And she thinks, okay, I'm going to take the cyanide and that's it. I'm going to kill myself. So then she picks up this box. And inside, actually, she hears something rattling inside the box. It wasn't the cyanide in powder form that she was expecting. It was something rattling in the box. And she opens a box and it's her nose ring. So she's shocked. She thinks, who is this beggar? Who is this person? So then she comes out with the nose ring and she shows Navakotinarayan the nose ring. And he's shocked because he left the nose ring with this beggar. Actually, he locked it in a solid iron box with a key. Alongside this beggar, he told the beggar to wait in the shop. So then when he's with his wife, he sees another nose ring, identical nose ring. And he's shocked, who is this person? So then he runs back to the shop and this beggar's disappeared. And he opens a box and the nose ring has also disappeared. So he's absolutely shocked. So he's retrieved the nose ring, that's fine. But he goes back to his wife and he's trying to understand, so who is this person? Who was that beggar? There's something mystical going on here. And so she says, have you not recognized who this person could be? And he was bewildered. He was trying to understand, who is this person? And she said, this was Krishna. This was Krishna. Every day for 6 months, Krishna had come to you. He was asking you for something and you never gave him a penny. So Navakotinarayan was transformed. He couldn't believe that Krishna had come to him every day. He had treated him so badly. And now Krishna had come to him and shown him this magic and actually revealed to him that he had come, that he himself had come to him. So then Navakotinarayan was running around everywhere around the town, calling for this beggar. He was describing him. He's this beggar. He looks very disheveled. He's like this. He's like that. He was running around everywhere trying to find this beggar who was Krishna. And then eventually he went to the temple. And he just went in front of the Lord, went in front of Krishna, and really prayed to him and apologized. He apologized. And he said, damn my riches, damn my wealth, damn my greed, damn my jewelry. I've been absorbed in these things for such a long time in such a greedy way. But I've forgotten about you. And now you've revealed yourself to me. And from this day on, I will dedicate my whole life to you, he said. So he gave everything up. He had a vault, a huge safe, where he kept his 9 million rupees worth of gold and other riches. And he opened it up and he called all the villagers and distributed all of his wealth. He left himself, and this is all a true story, he left himself with a dhoti and a kurta and a veena. And he went around everywhere just chanting the glories of the Lord with his wife. And he said, okay, so he told his wife, Saraswati Bai, let's pack up and we're going to Tirupati. Today we're going to Tirupati. So she said, how are you going to approach the Lord directly? No one can approach the Lord directly, and especially since you've upset him so much, you can't just approach Krishna yourself. So she said, you have to have a mediator. And he said, what do you mean a mediator? She said, you have to have a guru. You have to take a guru in order to become closer to Krishna. So there was a local guru. He was a very exalted personality. His name was Vyasaraj or Vyasatirtha. He's actually in our lineage. And they took shelter of him and he got the name Purandardas. He received the name Purandardas and he wrote 425,000 songs glorifying the Lord. 425,000 songs. And he's written about everything and anything. Anything he saw in the world, he related it to the Lord and glorified the Lord in that way. So he wrote 425,000 songs. This Purandara Das. So once, a little later on, Krishnadeva Rai, who was a king who he did business with in the past, he was with his guru, and his guru was also Vyasaraj. So they're riding on a horse. Krishnadeva Rai was at the front of the horse, and his guru was at the back of And they're riding on the horse, and they saw this Purandara Das. And Krishnadeva Rai said, "I recognize him. He's that jeweler who used to charge me for the milk." So, he, you know, and now he's begging. Now he's begging. He must be an imposter. He must be just trying to accumulate more wealth from the people. So, is he for real? And Vyasadeva said, "Actually, he's my disciple. You know, you're godbrothers." But Krishnadeva Rai didn't believe. He didn't believe that this person is actually for real. So then he said, "Okay, let's test him." So when Purandara Das saw his guru, he paid his full obeisances. He paid his dandavats, and he had his begging bag. So anything that he would receive, he would put into this bag. Any alms he would receive. So as he was paying his obeisances and chanting his pranam mantras, the king, Krishnadeva Rai, he put some jewels, some very valuable jewels, into the begging bag of Purandara Das. So then Purandara Das went back home, and he continued on with his day and so on. And then Krishnadeva Rai and Vyasatirtha, the king and the guru, they went to the home of Purandara Das. And they went, and when they visited him, he was away. He was out begging the next day. And they talked to his wife. They talked to Saraswati Bai. And they said, "So what do you do? What is your program?" And she described that we wake up early in the morning. We do Mangalarti. We do Tulsi Puja. We do also many prayers. We sing in the glorification of the Lord. Then my husband goes out to beg, and I just do household chores. They said, "Very good." And they said, "How was yesterday? What happened yesterday?" And she said, "Well, yesterday something went wrong. My husband came back after receiving alms, and I meant to clean the grains and then cook them. Then we invite people, anyone around, to come and eat, and then whatever's left, we eat. So yesterday was a little different, though, because when my husband came home, when we opened the bag of alms, there were many, many stones in this bag." So I said, "Oh, really? So what did you do with the stones?" And then she said, "Well, me and my husband, we separated the grains from the stones and we threw the stones into the garden. And the grains I cooked and we ate. But it took a long time. All these stones, there were many of them." So then they said, "Can we see the stones?" So then they said, she said, "Yes." So then they went to the back garden, and all of the diamonds, jewels, sapphires, which the king had thrown into the bag of Purandara Das, they were in the back garden. So they'd been thrown away. So in this way, they tested Purandara Das, and they could see that actually, yes, he's become a pure devotee, because Krishna describes in the Gita that someone who's very advanced, he sees pebbles, stones, and gold to be equal. So Purandara Das had come to this vision, this very exalted vision of not differentiating between material, between different types of matter. He wasn't attached anymore. He wasn't greedy anymore. And ultimately this came through the purification of Krishna. So through associating with Krishna, Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ki. So through association with Krishna, or those things which are non-different to Krishna, association with the holy name, association with the scriptures, we can actually become purified of all of these impurities. In this particular pastime, we see that Kamsa, it's actually really far out when you think about what Kamsa is actually doing. He's killed Devaki and Vasudev's children. And then afterwards, he comes back and he says to them, "Well, I'm really sorry I killed your children, but really think about it, you know?" And he becomes philosophical about the whole situation. So imagine, he's the murderer of your children. And in this day and age, if you have a murderer and he comes to, you know, he's put in jail and, you know, and you'll never see him again. But in this situation, Kamsa has just killed their children, and he comes to them and he begins to say, and just a few verses ago, we're in verse 27, in verses 22, 23, 24, we see that Kamsa's philosophizing with Devaki and Vasudev. He's saying, actually, this was all the will of providence. He's saying, actually, you shouldn't lament. You shouldn't be attached to your family members. You know, this is the basic philosophy. So, you know, he was a demon, but he was still talking about the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita. He was saying, actually, we shouldn't be attached to our family, friends, and nation. We should be detached. If you're attached to your children, then this is just the bodily concept of life. So imagine the murderer of your children comes to you and says, actually, you shouldn't be attached, Prabhu. You know, it's really... We see many situations in the scriptures where personalities, show a slightly different philosophy. When Gandhari, after the battle of Kurukshetra, she had 100 sons, and all of those 100 sons had been killed. And she was so distraught. So when she saw Krishna, she said, my whole family has been wiped out. And you, Krishna, could have stopped this. You could have put this to a stop, but you didn't. You didn't do anything about it. You're God. You're so powerful. You're the supreme. You could have saved my sons. You didn't even save Duryodhan, who was her favorite. He was the eldest. And so she cursed Krishna. She cursed Krishna that just like my whole family has been wiped out, I curse you that your whole Yadu dynasty will also be wiped out. And therefore in the 11th canto, we also hear that the Yadu dynasty, there's a fratricidal war amongst the Yadus as well. And they also kill themselves. So Gandhari could have also, Krishna could have said to her, hey, you shouldn't be attached. You know, you shouldn't be attached to your family, your foe, your friends and nation and so on. You know, this is a bodily concept of life. Similarly, Dronacharya, when he heard that his son Ashwatthama had been killed, of course he hadn't, but when he heard that his son's been killed, then he was a commander-in-chief of the army at the time of the Kauravas, but he put down his weapons and he sat down in lamentation and meditation. And in this way, Drishyadumna was able to kill him. When Maharaj Dashrat in the Ramayana, when he finds out that Ram is not going to be killed, but he's going to leave the kingdom for 14 years in exile, he dies out of separation for his sons. So there's many different reactions to separation, to those close to you being killed. But here Kamsa is saying to Vasudev and Devaki that actually you shouldn't be attached. Don't worry about it. Everything's okay. This is just the will of providence. And does anyone know who's saying this verse? Because this verse is saying, yes, this is all Vasudev. Vasudev himself, after his children being killed, is saying, yeah, actually, this is all the will of providence. So this made me think about the first canto again. And in the pastime where Maharaj Parikshit, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that Maharaj Parikshit is in yogic trance. He's meditating. And in this trance, he sees Dharma the bull, and the earth in the form of a cow. And they're lamenting. Dharma the bull is standing on one leg and he's urinating in fear. And the personality of Kali has an axe in his hand and he's about to kill, or he's hacking down the legs of Dharma the bull. So he's hacked down three of the legs. So Maharaj Parikshit comes into that situation. Kali, imagine the situation. Kali is standing there with an axe in his hands. And Dharma the bull is standing there fearful, three legs cut off, standing on only one leg, and he's in so much fear that he's urinating. And then Maharaj Parikshit stops Kali from doing what he's doing, and he says to Dharma the bull, who has done this to you? Who's done this to you? Now, the tendency of the conditioned soul is when something bad happens to us, the first thing we do is we look to blame someone. We look to blame the closest person to us or the perpetrator of this activity. Sometimes even when we know we've done something wrong, we still tend to try to blame others. You know, we still try to point the finger to shift the blame. This is a tendency of the conditioned soul. But Dharma the Bull doesn't do either of those things. Actually, he doesn't blame anyone. Again, he begins to philosophize. He begins to say, well, it could be karma. You know, maybe this is karma. Maybe I've done some bad activity in my previous life, and therefore I'm in the situation that I'm in today. He says, maybe it's Brahman. You know, maybe it's, the universal nature has caused this to happen. He says, maybe it's material nature. Maybe this is just, happened by chance. This is often what people propose. When anything happens, yeah, it's just chance. Sometimes on the streets I ask people, distributing books, I ask them, do you ever wonder why good things happen to bad people or why bad things happen to good people? And often people say, especially scientists or atheistic, the atheistic answer is, yeah, just chance, just happens. Random, just like atoms randomly collide with one another. Similarly, good things happen to bad people and bad things happen to good people. It's just chance. So this is a philosophy of many people, actually. And then the fourth option that Dharma the Bull gives is that you just can't know. You just cannot ascertain why anything happens. So Dharma the Bull could very easily say, well, it's obvious, it's Kali. You know, he's got an axe in his hands. You know, he's dressed up, but this is Kali, and he's doing this to me. Isn't it obvious? But this isn't the philosophy. This isn't how Dharma the Bull acts. Generally, we try to seek vengeance when someone does something bad to us. But this seeking for vengeance is often a replacement for really introspecting, for really going deeper and to really try and understand why is this actually happening to me, and for often really taking responsibility. What we don't understand is that when we point the finger, we actually implicate ourselves into a series of karmic reactions. We actually become party to the karma of the ill deed. And second thing, by meditating on the ill acts of others, on the bad qualities of others, we actually take on those qualities ourselves. So Dharma the Bull, he goes on to say that there may be a tormentor, but there may be someone who's actually doing this to me, but there's a fundamental reason why this is happening to me. So he says there's a klesha da. Da is to give, so, and klesha means misery. So there's someone who's giving me miseries, but there's a klesha bij. There's a seed for this klesha. There's a seed for this misery. And that seed could be many things, could be for many reasons. In essence, Prabhupada explains that things happen due to our karma, our karmic reactions. But he's explaining in the purport here that whatever reactions we get when we're devotees, those reactions are minimized. When we're trying to take shelter of Krishna, Krishna gives us but a token reaction of our misdeeds. And this is Krishna's kindness. And at the same time, he tries to purify us. So it's not just that we get our karmic reactions, but he also purifies us of our of the impurities in our heart. And eventually, ultimately, it helps us to come closer to him. Dharma the Bull also proposes that these bad situations in my life help me to become more humble. They help me to become more humble in my life. They help me to understand that I'm not the controller, that I'm not the enjoyer. And in this situation of humility, it becomes easier for us to take shelter of the Lord. Queen Kunti says in the first canto, 8th chapter, Vipada Shantuta Shashwat Tatra Tatra Jagat Guru, that please give me more and more miseries, more and more difficulties, so that I may take greater and greater shelter of you. Because in these situations of difficulty, naturally a devotee looks to Krishna and he takes shelter of Krishna. And he tries to become more and more Krishna conscious in that kind of a situation. So Lord Brahma explains, and Prabhupada quotes this verse, Tenu kampa susamikshamano bunjan nivatma kritam vipakam tadvag visar Ridvagvapurbhir vidadhan namaste jiveta yo mukti padesa dayabhag. That one who patiently tolerates all of the reverses that come in life and all the while continues to remember and take shelter of Krishna, for such a person, Liberation becomes his rightful heir. He becomes an heir to liberation. He becomes his rightful claim. So if we in our lives, and everyone experiences difficulties. I was actually talking to one devotee recently, and he joined when he was very young, in his early 20s. And he's been distributing books ever since. And for about 20 years, he distributed books, and then he decided to get married, and he did that. And he got married to a devotee, seemed to be a very strong devotee. After 10 years, they had 3 kids. He went on pilgrimage, and he came back. And when he came back, his wife told him, "I don't want to be a Hare Krishna anymore. I want to be a Christian." So while he was away for 1 month, she'd been going to the church. She hadn't met with the devotees, she hadn't gone to the temple, and she just wants to become a Christian, and that's it. Finished. End of story. She won't pick up a bead bag. She won't see the devotees. She's got nothing but criticism for the devotees, and she wants to move her kids out of the Gurukul and into the Christian school. She wants to move house away from the temple and closer to her favorite church and closer to her new Christian friends. And this devotee's life is just totally turned upside down. After 30 years of dedicated service to Krishna, 30 years of, you know, preaching, giving himself fully, you know, not someone who's mixed, but really just giving himself fully to the mission. And I was with him, and, you know, he's been around 30 years, I've been around 10, maybe, you know, 15, and he says to me, "What shall I do? Do you have any advice for me?" And I just said to him, "Prabhu, what can I say to you, you know?" But he just opened up, and we were just talking, we were discussing life, and we were discussing his situation, and we were discussing Shastra, and he was trying to understand, how do I see this? How do I understand this? What is Krishna actually doing here? What is my guru actually doing here? You know, because he prays very earnestly to his guru every day, at least 3 times a day. Dhyayan Stavamstas Yashastri Sandhyam. He prays and meditates on Guru. So he's saying, what have they got planned for me? So he wasn't swearing and shouting at his wife. He wasn't thinking, you know, how can you do this to me? You know, he wasn't hateful or vengeful. But he was philosophical about the situation. He was like Dharma the Bull. He was saying, what am I meant to learn from this situation? How can I deal with this situation in the most Krishna conscious way possible? How can I try and maintain the spiritual lives of my children? So we were discussing the possibilities of how he could negotiate with his wife of keeping his children in the Gurukul, keeping them in association of devotees, but she wants them to become Christians. So we were talking about, it was a very Krishna conscious set of conversations. And it was very, it was shocking, first of all. But it was also very inspiring just to see how through the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, we can actually be saved. This is actually a liberated situation. Because if anyone else is in this situation in the material world, literally they become depressed. Some people take to drugs and alcohol. Some people even become suicidal. But people really become distressed in these kind of situations. Of course, this devotee was upset. You know, his life had been turned upside down. But at the same time, the philosophy gave him the armor, gave him the ability and the understanding through which to really deal with this situation in a much more calm, peaceful, and thoughtful way. He was in a painful situation, but he wasn't suffering. And this was a very recent thing when I was speaking to him. So he was looking at how to move forward. So I was reflecting on how our philosophy allows us to really become immune. Like Prabhupada is saying, it allows us to become immune to the material situation that we find ourselves in, whether it's good or bad. And such a person who continues to tolerate whatever comes towards him and at the same time continuously try and take deeper and deeper shelter of the Lord, such a person necessarily becomes liberated. It's interesting, This verse says, Jiveta yo mukti padesa dayabhag. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is preaching to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya begins an impersonalist, and he's very well respected. But through his preaching, Mahaprabhu impresses and purifies Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He described the Atmaram verse in 61 different ways in such an expert conclusion. Eventually, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's mind is changed and he becomes a devotee, he becomes a personalist. And so when he sees this verse, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he says, why did it say mukti? Because this word mukti for a devotee is actually, devotees deride mukti. They're not interested in mukti because this is material liberation. This is jnana. And it's jnana karmadhyanavritam. We don't want mukti. We don't want liberation. Of course, liberation can refer to going back to Godhead, going to Goloka Vrindavan. But devotees aren't interested in this. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya taken to Krishna consciousness in such a deep way that he said, I don't want this word mukti to be there. So he scribbled it out and he wrote bhakti. Jiveta yo bhakti padesa dayabhag. That such a person gets bhakti. He gets the pure devotional service of the Lord and ultimately he can go back home, back to Godhead, back to Goloka Vrindavan and take deeper shelter of the Lord. So ultimately, someone who really takes shelter of the Lord in all situations, good and bad, doesn't blame others, like Devaki and Vasudev, they're not cursing Kamsa. They're not deriding him. They're not trying to gain vengeance upon him. But they're really looking at the situation in a philosophical way. If we can really take this on in our lives, and it's very difficult to do, our first nature is to point the finger. But they say when you're pointing the finger, one finger's pointing at them, three fingers are pointing at you. Ultimately, we have to understand, and I'm preaching to myself more than anyone else, that we have to understand that we are the klesha bij. We've sown the klesha bij for everything that comes towards us. We've sown the seeds for misery in our own lives. And this life is really about going through the reactions of those, about thanking Krishna because we understand that we only receive a token of those reactions. But ultimately, over and above everything else, at every moment, trying to take shelter of Krishna. And if we can do that, then bhakti padesa dayabhag. Thank you. I've gone over time. Are there any quick comments and questions? Because I've been told that we should...